Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, May 15th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission says Zimbabweans have voted peacefully in Wedza North amid reports of political violence in Urungwe West ahead of a similar parliamentary poll next month.
Ms. Timboko for ZANU-PF went to send today. As usual, they usually force and victimize people to attend the ZANU-PF rally. They force the closure of some business centers at Senga County.
The MDCT says Vice President Pelegezela Mpoko should step down for alleging that the 5th Brigade atrocities were a conspiracy of the West.
It is most reprehensible, it is regrettable, it is actually shocking. This is why we say he must search his conscience and proceed to resign as a matter of urgency.
And lawyers in South Africa have been given access to detained foreigners, including Zimbabweans, who were arrested recently at the Johannesburg Methodist Church.
We have had access to them. Last Friday, we understood that there was an operation in the Johannesburg downtown area where large numbers of people had been arrested at the Central Methodist Church, as well as other buildings in the area.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, is reporting that the people of Wedza North, Mashonaland East Province, started voting peacefully this morning, but in Urungwe West, in Mashonaland West Province, where another parliamentary by-election will take place June 10th, violence is said to be escalating, as Blessing Zulu reports.
ZEC says there were no reports of violence in Wedza North, where the ruling ZANU-PF is facing off with some smaller opposition parties. Few people are said to have gone to the polling stations in the morning, with most of them casting their votes during the day. But in Urungwe West, where Vice President Pelegezela Mpoko was visiting today, it was a different tale. Members of the opposition MDC and those backing independent candidate Themba Muliskwa say state security agents were on the rampage, targeting them and forcing some schools and shopping centers to temporarily shut down. MDC spokesman for Mashonaland West, Wilson Makanyaire, says his party members were beaten up today.
The vice president of the country, Ms. Timboko for ZANU-PF, went to send today. As usual, they usually force and victimize people to attend the ZANU-PF rally. They force the closure of some business centers at Senga County, which people refuse to take. And when they attended the rally, they chanted the slogan, "Down with Morgan Tsvangirai," and people refused. They went on to ask, "But why are you bothering Tsvangirai? He's not here, he's not contesting. And it is only you contesting." Then they were not with them.
The Zimbabwe Peace Project Director, Justina Mukoko, says their members are confirming these incidents.
The situation in Urungwe West is concerning for most of us, in the sense that there's a lot of fear being instilled in the electorate, and there is a lot of harassment and intimidation that is also taking place. And I think it is also quite worrisome for traditional leaders to be used to commandeer people to meeting.
Efforts to get a comment from Poco or ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo were unsuccessful as they did not answer their mobile phones. But ZANU-PF Politburo member Munyaradzi Paul Mangwana dismissed the allegations.
That is not true. There is no violence whatsoever. We need to check with the police whether there have been any reports. Our youth are campaigning peacefully. Only that we have structures which go down to the ground, and if you don't find the ground penetrable, you know, only violence.
The director of the Election Resource Center, Tawanda Chimini, says all candidates who are alleged to be perpetrating violence must be disqualified.
We seem to be getting into this culture of just noting incidences of malpractice and just talking about them, but without following through what should be provided for in terms of a functional electoral democracy. So wherever electoral malpractice is noted and is evident, the candidates and political parties that are perpetrating that malpractice must be disqualified. So this is what we're calling for.
Chairman Elasto Mugwadi of the newly established National Rights Institution, the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, confirmed to Studio 7 that he has dispatched a team to probe the alleged violence in Urungwe West.
No, our people are still on the ground. We still haven't received the comprehensive report which we were expecting anytime between now and the next Wednesday.
Mugwadi, however, says the human rights groups that are complaining about the alleged violence have not appealed directly to his office. Some human rights groups have also called upon ZEC to postpone the Wurungwe by-election, alleging that the situation is not conducive for the holding of a free and fair election. Efforts to get a comment from ZEC chairperson Justice Rita Makarao were futile as her phone went unanswered. But those monitoring elections and Muliskwa confirm they've asked her to probe the escalating tensions in Wurungwe West. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
The Movement for Democratic Change Formation, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, says Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko should immediately step down for alleging that the 5th Brigade atrocities were conspiracy of the West. Reacting to Mpoko's remarks at Great Zimbabwe University that President Robert Mugabe had nothing to do with the atrocities, the MDCT said it found it totally appalling that this was the second time he is making what the party claims to be irresponsible, insensitive, and reckless statements about the killings. The MDCT said what is also shocking is that the vice president hails from Matabeleland region, where more than 20,000 people were allegedly killed by the country's North Korean-trained 5th Brigade. It brutalized then-PF ZAPU President Joshua Nkomo's supporters at the height of political clashes between his party and President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF. Tsvangirai's party further said it is an unmitigated insult to the victims and the survivors of the Gukurahundi genocide for Mpoko to falsely and artlessly claim that Gukurahundi was a conspiracy of the West. Mpoko was not reachable for comment. MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu tells Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo the vice president is angering people in Matabeleland and the Midlands provinces that were affected by the atrocities.
Robert Mugabe himself is on record as having publicly admitted that the Gukurahundi genocide was a moment of madness. So for Pelekezela Mpoko to sing for his supper so loudly and to show utter disregard to the thousands of people who were massacred by the North Korean-trained 5th Brigade in the Midlands and Matabeleland provinces, it is most reprehensible, it is regrettable, it is actually shocking. This is why we say he must search his conscience and proceed to resign as a matter of urgency.
Any plans by your party, Mr. Gutu, to quiz Mr. Mpoko on this matter the day he comes to Parliament?
Definitely. I can assure the listeners who are listening right now that Pelekezela Mpoko is going to be thoroughly quizzed by our members of Parliament in both the National Assembly and the Senate when he comes for question time. It is actually very surprising that this is a man who has previously refused to even come to Parliament to answer questions.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare. ZANU-PF activist and political commentator says Mpoko's remarks have surfaced in some research being conducted by social scientists, though his party does not have a generalized way of looking into atrocities.
I don't see the reason why the vice president's opinion or research would be attributed to the whole of ZANU-PF. You discover that those kind of beliefs can also be viewed in a similar way by social scientists because, you know, the West has always had interest in Zimbabwe and Britain in particular.
But is it not common knowledge that the 5th Brigade was trained by North Korea and deployed in those provinces and the government was aware of it?
Well, look, that is the cosmetic thing about it, but the vice president was talking about the underlying force in the whole issue. Boko Haram consists of, you know, Nigerians. But what is the underlying force that is supporting those militants to have, you know, an army that is stronger than even the army itself, the country's army? Yes, on a cosmetic, on face value, you will talk of where those people or where the personnel were trained. But what is the structure behind that? Who sponsored that? Where did that come from? That is the issue that the vice president was talking about.
That was Maurice Ngwenya, a ZANU-PF activist and political commentator, speaking with Studio 7, Sintungamile Nkomo from Harare.
Meanwhile, the MDCT says some of its supporters were beaten up in Gweru today when they staged a peaceful protest against the deteriorating economic situation in Zimbabwe. Though police were not reachable for comment, reports say one person was injured when police blocked the demonstrators.
And in Mutare today, Acting President, Vice President and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa admitted that Zimbabwe acquired land from former white commercial farmers through chaotic means, though the government cannot apologize for conducting the exercise. Over 3,000 farmers lost their entities in land reforms that were said to be targeted at empowering local people. Mnangagwa said this when he was addressing a gathering of about 500 people at a constitutional advocates meeting at Mutare Teachers College. He said there's no formula for land redistribution or a revolution, and as a result, it was correct to seize the land in that manner. Mnangagwa said the government is addressing some of the land reform anomalies through a land audit.
Lawyers in South Africa say they have been given access to detained foreigners, including Zimbabweans, who were arrested recently at the Johannesburg Methodist Church. The clampdown came hard on the heels of xenophobic attacks in the country recently, which left 7 people dead. David Court, coordinator of strategic litigation at the Lawyers for Human Rights, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu they talked to some detainees today following an order by the High Court for South Africa to stop all deportations of the arrested foreigners and allow them to have access to attorneys.
We have had access to them. Last Friday, we understood that there was an operation in the Johannesburg downtown area where large numbers of people had been arrested at the Central Methodist Church, as well as other buildings in the area. When we tried to intervene and consult with the people who were there, including specific names, we were denied access to the police station. That evening, we had to get an urgent court order to allow us access, but they still ignored that court order during the entire weekend. So on Tuesday morning, we had to approach the court again and ask for an urgent order to delay the deportation for 2 weeks, to give us a list of everyone who'd been detained in that operation, and to allow us to consult with them. We did receive the list on Wednesday, and now we've started consultations yesterday, and those consultations are ongoing. They have revealed certain rights violations that happened during the operation, including soldiers and police officers kicking down doors of private dwellings, people being arrested and not being allowed to access their documents to prove their status in the country, and people who had been detained for a very long time, despite the fact that they're lawfully in South Africa.
Does this mean those who are illegally in South Africa do not have a legal leg to stand on?
The Immigration Act does allow for people who do not have any documentation to be deported from South Africa and then not to return for a period of up to 5 years.
So what happens after 2 weeks?
We're not looking to ensure that no one is deported, but we don't want people who have asylum claims or who have previously applied for asylum to be deported. So the part of the point of the consultations is to consult with people to determine whether they are in fact asylum seekers or refugees.
That was David Court, coordinator of strategic litigation at the Lawyers for Human Rights, speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. Nearly 600 foreigners were arrested at the Johannesburg Methodist Church a few days ago, where they have been living due to various challenges. Amnesty International today appealed to the South African government to implement the High Court order.
A faith-based non-governmental organization says it is essential for Zimbabwe to deal with the nation's historical conflicts, as failure to do so will see the cycle of political violence continuing in the country. Our correspondent Taurai Shava has more details from the Midlands provincial capital, Gweru.
Speaking to journalists during a workshop on conflict-sensitive reporting in Mlawa recently, Programs and Training Manager Reverend Skalo Tele of the Ecumenical Church Leaders Forum, or ECLF, said while conflict is an inevitable facet of society, it is important to manage it so that it does not degenerate into flagrant violence. Reverend Kale said in many instances, victims of violent conflict that has occurred in the country in the past still feel aggrieved, and failure to deal with this may result in some sections of society feeling slighted and excluded, which is the potential of breeding extremism or rebellion that may plunge the country into open hostilities.
Zimbabwe has gone through its own pains and its own conflicts, and those conflicts remain unresolved. Unless and until this nation deals with that, we are headed one day for a backlash. We mustn't sweep anything under the carpet. We mustn't avoid anything. We need to face it head on, painful as it is, and deal with it and get over it.
Reverend Kele lauded the constitutional provision allowing for the setting up of the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission, saying such a commission enables the nation to deal with its past, provided the commission is allowed to carry out its work without any undue interference. Reverend Kele said it is important for media practitioners to appreciate that what they write or broadcast has the potential to either aggravate or lessen conflict. Citing the example of President Robert Mugabe's recent utterances about Kalangas, some journalists who participated in the workshop said it is sometimes difficult for the media to avoid issues that apparently exacerbate conflict, as such issues are usually newsworthy. While acknowledging the dilemma, Reverend Kele, however, said it is still possible to handle such stories in a conflict-sensitive manner that ensures that harm is minimized. ECLF Director Bishop Ambrose Moyo reiterated the importance of media in society and exhorted journalists to consciously seek to promote peace in their work.
Nobody can ignore the power of the pen, but its use has to come with responsibility. There is therefore need for a new practice of reporting that consciously works for peace and engages reporters in their roles of advocacy and strengthens the original roles of journalism, which gives media independence and objectivity.
Tatenda Chitagu, a freelance journalist based in Masvingo, told Studio 7 that he found the conflict-sensitive reporting workshop both useful and enlightening, adding that it was coming at the right time as the country is facing various problems that can worsen conflict.
It's a timely training given the tensions and the polarization that is currently obtaining in Zimbabwe. People are really upset because of the economic situation obtaining in the country. So journalists should not fuel, you know, conflicts. There is need not to kill the story, but at the same time, there is also no need to be seen, you know, fueling conflicts or maybe causing conflicts.
The conflict-sensitive reporting workshop drew journalists based in the country's southern region and included those from the state and private media, as well as freelancers. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shaba.
Thanks, Taurai. Coming up,
Indian team of doctors conducts over 1,000 free medical operations.
And Warriors fail to get adequate training for an African soccer tournament.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
At first, let's look at regional and international news.
Authorities in Burundi say they've arrested three people in connection with Wednesday's attempted coup against President Pierre Nkurunziza.
Searchers in Nepal found the wreckage of a Marine Corps helicopter that crashed during an earthquake relief flight, and officials say it is apparent that all aboard were killed.
Somali officials say their forces have retaken two towns, Adwele and Mubarak, about 75 kilometers west of Mogadishu, that Al-Shabaab militants briefly captured late Friday.
The U.S. Congress is making another attempt to reform the government's international broadcasting agency, which includes the Voice of America.
Islamic State militants took over the local government compound in the Iraqi city of Ramadi on Friday, raising their black flag over the capital of Anbar province.
And a jury is in the third day of deliberations on whether convicted Boston Marathon bomber Shokhat Sanai should spend the rest of his life in prison or be put to death.
Some organizations in Zimbabwe and around the world will tomorrow mark the Global Day of Citizen Action, a day meant to raise awareness on the importance of civic space and the freedom to speak out, organize, and take action. At least 12 events have been lined up in Zimbabwe for marking the day, designed to encourage citizens to be the change agents in their communities. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Mishek Gondo, director of the National Association of Youth Organizations, who are leading celebrations in Zimbabwe.
What we'll be doing tomorrow is through our member organizations, we provided some material for them and we provided some technical support to commemorate in their communities. To sing out in Karoi, I will be in Chikangwe tomorrow celebrating this day in Marondera. But the major event will be in Harare, where we are celebrating this event with junior counselors, where we are celebrating this event also with young people coming from different parts of community and society. We are celebrating this day in about 12 communities in Zimbabwe. Also in Bulawayo, the civil society, they have formed a coalition to celebrate this day.
Can you explain what organizations are calling for in Zimbabwe in terms of being the change?
What we are saying is if our communities become the change, for example, the government is also part of this community I'm talking about as a stakeholder. If we change and if we respect these rights, this will also bring development in our nation. Take, for example, Zimbabwe. Because of our human rights records, we have investment in Shambo. So we need to realize this. One important thing that I want also to raise to tender is we are celebrating this day during the time when Itai Dzamara is missing, which is a very sad note in terms of freedom. And we are saying whoever we have abducted Itai Dzamara, this is the time to bring back Itai Dzamara, because as a citizen, he has got his rights and he needs to be protected by his government. So we are also calling for Itai Dzamara to be brought back.
That was Mishek Gondo, director of the National Association of Youth Organizations, speaking with Studio 7 Tatenda Gumbo.
Nineteen Indian doctors that have been in Zimbabwe's eastern border city of Mutare, Manicaland province, offering free medical services to local patients, have finished their tour of duty after successfully carrying out more than 1,000 surgeries. Beneficiaries are upbeat about the free surgeries. Our correspondent Lloyd Mhamoyo has the story from Mutare.
The program known as the Rotary Medicare Project Vocational Training Team to Zimbabwe is the brainchild of the Rotary International and the Rotary Foundation. It started 2 weeks ago at Mutare Provincial Hospital, Nyanga District Hospital, and Sakova District Hospital's eye unit. Surgeries were conducted in various fields, including orthopedics, gynecology, optometry, and others. Manicaland Provincial Medical Director Dr. Patron Vengema Faune says the specialist doctors successfully carried out 1,100 individual surgeries after setting a target of 800. She says the specialist doctors were working in 5 medical categories in the 3 referral hospitals where patients were screened before undergoing the necessary operations.
For Nyanga District, they actually organized a weekend where they went out with doctors, I think that had been supported by the Honorable Minister Superman Ndwanzira, and they went and they screened in their facilities. And then for the province, for the other districts in Manicaland, we worked with our Provincial Minister of State and also the Provincial Administrator, who then used our local leaders like the councillors and the chiefs to mobilize for our communities to go to the nearest district hospital for screening.
Dr. Mafaune says the free medical service was a timely intervention as most people were not in a position to pay for such surgeries due to financial hardships. She says local hospitals are currently facing shortages of medical doctors among related staff members. One of the beneficiaries, Love Mods Namarira, was involved in a motorcycle accident. His injured leg was supposed to be amputated, but this was addressed by the visiting doctors.
I am very grateful for the assistance. My leg is now fine.
Dr. Rajan Sharma, who operated on Namarira's leg, says he is lucky to have had the operation in time and with the right care, since he was going to be an amputee or become handicapped.
He has sustained the fracture for 2 weeks back, and it was not operated. And it was only given a conservative treatment only in the form of traction, which he should have a deformity and physical disability of 2-inch shortening. His lower limb should have been 2-inch short. Now we operated him. Now he is absolutely okay now.
Another beneficiary of the free medical service is Fungwa Chakandinakira. The man says he did not have money for an operation that he needed until he was helped by these doctors.
I didn't far kurapwa zvozvaita zvekubatsirwa ngekuti ndakanga ndisina mare kuti ndaigona kuzvirapisa.
I am happy with the free treatment I have received from these doctors. Since I did not have the money for the surgery, I am really happy.
Gynecologist Dr. Manisha Jekteb says the team carried out surgeries on a large number of women with fibroids.
Fibroid patient. She was nulliparous, having no children and having three big fibroids. So we have removed only the fibroids. The uterus is saved and the operation is now just done. Now there is an emergency cesarean section, and after that again more 4 patients we are supposed to operate.
Project advisor and pathologist Dr. Rajiv Pradhan notes that the 19-member team was in Zimbabwe as a gesture of extending a helping hand to less privileged people in Africa. He says they have also been to Malawi, Swaziland and Rwanda, among other African nations.
Why did we come to Butare? This is a part of our own initiative through Rotary International. We are from India, and way back in 1998, after I had finished my world presidency and everything, we started thinking that we must also realize in action that humanity is one throughout the world. And we wanted to do service beyond borders.
The free medical treatment has been timely to most Zimbabweans hard-pressed to raise money for medical fees. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Leda Moyo.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with experts and you, the listeners, about the forthcoming parliamentary elections amid reports of political violence in some parts of the country.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. Legendary American guitarist B.B. King, considered one of the most influential blues musicians of all time, has died at the age of 89. The King of Blues died peacefully in his sleep Thursday night at his home in the western U.S. city of Las Vegas, his attorney said. During his early 70-year career, King helped popularize the blues genre and influenced countless other rock and blues musicians with his deep, soulful vocals and trademark vibrato electric guitar style.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Ever since the day we met. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission says people have voted peacefully in Wedza North amid reports of political violence in Hurungwe West.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.